Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma and I'm Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. I'm today joined by two visitors, Akira Miyamoto and Chikako Ishiguro, who are Senior Visiting Research Fellows to the Natural Gas Programme at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, to discuss their forthcoming paper, The Outlook for LNG in China Towards 2020, The War Against Air Pollution. It's really nice to have you both here. Thank you very much for coming all the way from Japan. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, look, I really like the name of your paper. And let's start with you, Akira. You know, the war against pollution. You know, in a battle, of course, there are opposing forces or armies. Who are the opposing forces in this battle?
Yeah, that is the severe air pollution. I think many people remember that during the Beijing Olympic Games in 2007.
Yeah.
There was a blue sky, but it was only a temporary phenomenon.
Right. And that's it? So it's just a temporary thing? Yeah, okay. And so, I know, Chikako, you know, this problem, you know, is it a government problem, you know? And how is central government like China driving the action?
Yes, in 2011,
yeah.
Monitoring data of air pollution was published on the Twitter by U.S. Embassy
yeah.
in Beijing, and the news was broadly reported in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the PM 2.5 issue began to draw Chinese people's attention. That was the trigger of the current war against air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Chinese government gives high priority to the environmental policy
mm-hmm.
as the environmental protection law devised in 2015 stipulated. The environmental protection is a basic policy in the state.
And, okay, but it's a particulate. We're talking about particulates here, aren't we? When you say PM, it's particulate pollution, yes?
Yes.
So let's start now talking about the measures taken against air pollution since the late 2000s. Can you, perhaps, Chikako, give us an overview of what has been done and how has this been addressed in the different Chinese five-year plans?
Yes. During the 11th five-year plan, yeah. from 2006 to 2010,
right.
the main target was SO2 mm-hmm. emission. And during the following 12th five-year plan, towards 2015, the main target was nitrogen oxide. But the middle of 12th plan, the PM 2.5 yeah. came into the government target. And the measures on the reduction of PM 2.5 have been getting more and more important.
Mm-hmm.
The watershed year of the environmental policy was 2013, when the Air Pollution Prevention and Control Action Plan came into force.
Right.
The action plan set more concrete binding numerical target and laid out more robust policy to achieve the target.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was a few improvement in actual PM 2.5 observation data at the end of 2015. As a result, the government introduced a series of hard-hitting measures focusing on Beijing, Tianjin, Hebei, and its surrounding areas
mm-hmm.
by the end of 2017. That is the final year of the action plan.
Interesting. And so how successful have these anti-pollution steps been then?
So it seems to me that measures on SO2 and NOx emissions from the large power generation plants and industrial facilities were going successfully in the relatively short period.
Mm-hmm.
However, measures on PM 2.5 emissions have to cover all the sectors, such as residential and transportation sectors. And there are so many emission sources, so it may take more time,
oh, I think. How long do you think it's going to take then?
At least towards 2020.
Really? So
yes.
It's going to take that long?
Yes.
And it's particulate pollution, really, as we said before, so it's going to take that time until we start to see. But we'll talk later about the blue skies
okay.
policy. I think it's interesting. But one of the course, the key drivers of this is coal, is the burning of coal. So what is the role of coal in the Chinese energy mix, and is the drive to substitute coal for gas, you know, there when coal is so much cheaper?
Okay, so yes, the coal is a very important energy in China. But in 2014, the strategic action plan for the energy development was published. The plan established target for energy supply and demand up to 2020. Mm-hmm. And the principal objective was to reduce coal consumption, that is a low-grade coal, mm-hmm. and encourage users to switch to other fuels. Until then, there was not a clear policy to reduce coal consumption, but the reduction of coal has been strengthened in the series of air pollution measures since mm-hmm. then. So various options of substituting coal are indicated, for example, switching to electricity, renewables, or green coal.
Right.
And also energy efficiency. And the natural gas is merely the one solution of them. The important thing is China is experiencing an energy shortage, so selecting appropriate option seems to be determined by availability of supply capability of each option.
That's interesting. So, you know, what's driving the decision making? You know, is it economic factors or is it basically politics that's driving the decision making?
Yes, it's completely political.
It's completely political.
Yes.
So you could have a situation where coal would be a relatively lower cost energy,
yes.
but still gas would be the preferred energy in the mix for political reasons.
Yes, because the coal is thought to be a cause of PM2.5.
So therefore, you know, how successful have the Chinese action plans been to reduce emissions? You know, is there a lot more to do? There must be.
So according to the official document published by the Chinese government, monitoring data of PM2.5 is in the key cities have been improving.
Good.
However, when we look at the data during winter season, quite high emissions can be observed in many cities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it is still insufficient. However, at the same time, the social confusion such as gas supply shortages occurred, and probably the progress has been slowing down.
Okay. And so that's because there were shortages of gas.
Yes.
And it's actually driven going back to coal.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's interesting. Well,
Green coal.
I understand. Okay. Akira, just turning to you then. Yeah. You know, we talked, Chikako briefly talked about the 5-year plan from 2016 to 2020 being perhaps more stringent, you know. And of course, we have heard about the blue sky strategy. So where does that fit in with this?
Yes. The sudden 5-year plan announced in March 2016 basically set a binding target of lowering in comparison with the target in the actual data in 2015.
Right.
And Blue Sky Defense War, the Blue Sky Action Plan for the year to 2018 to 2020. This is a 3-year comprehensive plan to action to tackle air pollution in line with the 13th 5-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the target are almost the same as the 5-year plan.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Interesting. So what I did find interesting in your paper, you know, if I can quote, if I may, or on the other hand, you said unexpected social problems arise from the shortages of natural gas supply during the 2017-2018 winter season, which is what we talked about a few seconds ago. And it's become obvious that reducing coal consumption would be an important issue to be resolved. So I think my question is, could we see a zero coal power stations in the Chinese energy mix? Do you think that's going to be feasible at all?
Yeah, I think no, it is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
As Chikako said, the main target is the reduction of low-grade coal.
Right.
So when clean coal technology and or desulfurization and the nitrification plants are installed, that is no problem.
No problem at all. Okay, yeah. Interesting. Well, look, let's turn now and talk about perhaps, you know, demand for gas and, you know, and LNG, you know. And as we know, in, you know, winter 2017, which is November 2017 to March 2018, Now, we saw a huge increase in Chinese gas and LNG demand, and I think this is fair to say it was a surprise to the market. And, you know, the key driver of this was a surge in Asian spot prices, which resulted in it going to over $10. So what was the background that provoked this rise in gas demand and the resultant rise in LNG imports into China?
Yes. The growth was partly attributed to fairly good economic situation and also improved price competitiveness, resulting from a lowering of the natural gas price.
Right.
But the main reason for the sharp increase was definitely due to coal to gas switching.
Okay.
And as for the increase in LNG imports, the growth of the pipeline gas supplies, including imports from Central Asia, was not enough to catch up the growth of consumption.
Right.
Namely, supply shortages occurred and then they have to increase energy imports.
But was there a reduction in pipeline imports, or was it just that the pipeline imports couldn't meet the growth in demand?
Yes, and from Central Asia, unexpected shortage occurred last year.
Yeah.
But this is resumed. This year.
It is. It's interesting because in the Institute we've been talking about the reliability of Central Asian gas into China as being a factor for the growth of pipelines. Well, we'll talk about more the growth of pipelines in a minute. So just, so you know, we talk about the shortages, you know, is it a China-wide problem, these shortages, or was it just in one particular area?
Yeah, I think it is the China-wide problem. The government made an effort to maintain stable supply by diverting gas from south to east region to north region. So I think large part of China was influenced by such gas supply adjustment by the central government.
So the question also, of course, is, you know, not only gas imports, but also domestic gas production. You know, what is the outlook for gas production in the country then?
Yes, regarding firstly, conventional resources, these exist in abundance. However, recently, the growth rate has been slowing, and it is unlikely that conventional domestic output will increase dramatically to keep up pace with the current double-digit growth in natural gas consumption. As for coal bed methane, the 11th five-year plan set a production target of 16 BCM in 2015.
Right.
But in reality, the production was only 7 BCM.
Wow, the less than half,
Yes, and the starting five-year plan set a target of 10 BCM per year in 2020. And considering next shale gas, actual output came to 8 BCM in 2016 and 9 BCM in 2017. And the starting five-year plan set the production target for 2020 of 30 BCM.
Right.
And by 2030, it is 80 to 100 BCM. But the production costs are high, and it is the target we not achieved, I think.
So that means to me, Akira, that you know, more gas imports will be required. Is that the case?
Yes, I think so. After 2020, it is crucial for China that how much natural gas can be imported from Russia.
Okay, all right. Well, let's talk about that in a minute. But let's perhaps turn our attention to domestic gas pricing. You know, and I think the question is, you know, what is natural gas's price competitiveness relative to competing fuels?
Yes, basically, the domestic gas price are regulated by the government, and the government has devised many times to realize the price competitiveness relative to competing fuels.
Right.
But it seems to be a hard and complex task.
Mm.
Roughly speaking, in the power sector, it is difficult for natural gas to compete with coal thermal plants.
Yes.
So they use natural gas thermal plant as peak plant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In the industrial sector, natural gas can theoretically compete with oil product, as most of natural gas pricing formula are linked to oil prices.
That's interesting. And as Chikako said earlier on, a lot of it, these decision making, as well as a coal or gas, is political rather than economic. But just thinking about the hubs, because we hear a lot about the development of hubs in Asia, and specifically one of them's Shanghai. So I wondered, what is the development of hub pricing in Shanghai, and do you think we'll see other hubs in China?
Yeah, I think it is very difficult for the government to promote the deregulation of natural gas market under the current market environment, mm-hmm. which is dominated by the severe gas shortages.
Right.
Under such situation, market reforms and deregulation, introducing market mechanism, may simply increase the number of problems and confusions.
Right.
So I don't think Western style of gas hub will not established in the near future in China.
That's interesting. And the other element, of course, of domestic pricing as well as hub pricing is the role of subsidies. And these historically were used in the Chinese gas market. You know, are they still used and why?
Yes. And even before coal-to-gas switching projects were implemented, subsidies to natural gas were provided, for example, in the power generation sector. But in the recent coal to gas switching in the residential and in industrial sectors, there were quite a large amount of subsidies provided to help cover equipment and installation cost.
Right.
In the residential sector, subsidies are provided for even the payment for the gas tariffs during the winter period.
Really? Okay, yes.
Yeah. This is simply because the final consumer cannot bear the cost.
Yeah, they can't bear the cost. It's part of the social contract. Well, why don't we talk about gas consumption for a few minutes? You know, what are the key drivers for gas demand, and which sectors are really underpinning the growth of this demand?
Yes. Yeah, double-digit growth in all sectors, except use of natural gas as a feedstock in the chemical industry in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
In the city gas sector, strengthened action on air pollution caused rapid growth in consumption for residential heating.
Mm-hmm.
In the industrial sector, growth has been partly attributed to very good economic growth,
right,
and improved price competitiveness. And but, however, biggest promotion of coal to gas switching of small boilers in the key cities and regions appear to have been a major factor.
Okay.
The situation in the power generation sector was the first reason is that the natural gas-fired thermal power generation capacity increased to substantially in last year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And also, I said that there was a very good economic growth, and electricity replacing coal projects are also implemented.
Right.
And growth in electric vehicles,
mm-hmm.
number, right, is one of the reasons, I think.
Yeah. Interesting, because we've heard some rumors about gas shortages. You know, what about gas storage? Is there a need for more gas storage in the country?
Yes, I think so. And there is, according to the document published by the Chinese government, seasonal gap ratio of natural gas consumption is about 3.5.
Right.
But I think in the northern China, the ratio is more bigger.
Mm-hmm.
This means that a large amount of gas storage are required to maintain economically efficient and stable gas supply.
Right.
New regulation about gas storage was announced that gas suppliers, mainly CNPC, Sinopec, and CNOOC, to have a storage facilities about to able to meet at least 10% of their contracted sales by 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Interesting. So let's just talk for a minute about the outlook for natural gas demand over the next 2 to 3 years. You know, do you think we're going to see more shock changes in LNG demand that could underpin a rise in spot prices?
Yes. So I think the we analyzed in this paper that the if the coal to gas switching project are implemented, the potential demand is around 400 BCM per year.
Right.
But when we look at the supply capability in the current China, the natural gas consumption will grow to around 320 BCM by 2020. At most, I think.
Yeah. That's still a substantial growth. And that's interesting because you raise, that raises the issue of infrastructure, doesn't it? You know, so if we return to LNG for a minute, you know, what is the status of the LNG import infrastructure? You know, your paper, it says that the terminals are operating around about 85% utilization rate, which seems very high on a sustainable basis. So I just wondered, you know, what is the current status of that?
Yes. 85% of utilization rate is based on the nameplate receiving capacity announced by the terminal owners. When we think about terminal capacity, it is determined by various factors such as how many jetties are there, how many storage tanks, and how much are the storage capacities, and how much are they sending out capacities, including loading to load trucks, and also the how much downstream customer can offtake.
Yeah.
This means that the terminal capacity differs by actual utilization. For example, using for power generation source or using for city gas source are quite different.
Right, right.
So when we think about how much energy China will import, we have to look at carefully about this point. So be careful, the study use, I think that the nameplate terminal capacity can be assessed correctly.
That's an interesting point, that what you say about the that constraint. But so what about infrastructure, you know, constraints? You know, is this a real problem? Do we have an issue there?
Yes, I think the inefficient pipeline networks and gas storage capacity may be the major constraints, I think.
So therefore, you know, do you think we're going to need more gas pipeline capacity? You know, is there a need for more pipelines from Russia?
Yes, I think so. Yes, I think that the domestic network are constructing more, and the import pipeline from Russia is also important for.
Interesting. Well, look, let's look to the future now, as we kind of bring ourselves to the end of this podcast. You know, does your research identify how changes in gas demand could impact on the international LNG market up to 2020 and maybe out to 2030? Do you have any views on that?
Yes. And I said that there is a big potential.
Yeah, big potential, yes, exactly. So there's a big potential there for additional imports of LNG into China. Is that what you're saying, Akela?
Yes. I think in our estimate, and the China will import around 60 million tons in 2020.
Okay.
Yes, this is the upper limit of receiving capacity.
60 million, that's a considerable amount, I have to say. Well, look, why don't we kind of bring this to a close by talking about the last 25 minutes, you know, a lot of issues we've had. And I think I'd just like to ask, you know, and perhaps I'll bring Chicago into the conversation as well, you know, where will this end up? You know, will China continue to be a huge LNG buyer in the future? You know, and how are Chinese companies going to influence the market? Who'd like to go first? Akira, do you want to go first on that? And I'll come to Chicago.
Yes. I think that currently, China has receiving terminals of 90 terminals,
yeah,
and probably the number will increase to more than 40.
40?
Yes,
oh, in the next decade. Increase. Yeah, exactly.
And so it is certain that China will import energy by these assets.
Right.
When we look at Japan, there are more than 40 receiving terminals in the very small nation, island nation. And now import more than 70 million tons. But it will decrease around 64 or 65 million tons toward the mid-2020. So China will be the world's largest importer, I think.
You think it will?
Yeah.
Okay. Chikako, do you have any kind of final comments on where you think, you know, we could see China in the future?
Yes. As Miyamoto-san said, that, you know, in 2020, there is a possibility for the China become the biggest country of the energy market in the world. So that the impact of its volume and the impact of its prices are huge. So I think one possibility is if the China discover the new pricing for LNG, which was for a longer time Japan lead the LNG pricing in Asia, but some change will be happen in the, for the LNG pricing in Asia.
I think it's a very interesting insight. Well, look, Chikako and Akira, thank you very much for your time. I have to say I really enjoyed our conversation. It clearly tells us what's happening in the Chinese gas market and gives us very useful insights and builds on your paper that will soon be published by the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies and will be available at our website, www.oxfordenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. You know, I hope all of you have enjoyed listening to this podcast, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.